continue our conversation on landscape and garden. Mr. Harper, we just talked about fertilizing and wet, and you know, you fertilize when it's wet and you need that to soak in. I know you're not a big fan of weed and feed, but if I'm doing a citrus tree, can I do fertilizer and pre-emergent at the same time?
You could mix a fertilizer and a pre-emergent. There are the fertilizers that have pre-emergent in them, I think, are much more effective than the fertilizers that have a post-emergent or a weed killer mixed in them. And you certainly don't want to use those in and around or under your citrus trees. Pre-emergent you can, and fertilizers that have a pre-emergent in with them, I think, that makes sense. A post-emergent mix with fertilizer to me makes no sense because, number one, if you read the directions on those, you can't water after you apply them, or you're washing the weed killer off of the leaves of the weeds you're trying to kill. So economically, they're not a good decision. They're not very effective, typically, if you've got a bad weed problem. I just advise people to stay away from them. Only use weed killers where you – plus, then you're putting weed killer everywhere as opposed to just where you need it, which isn't the best practice either. So if you want to use a pre-emergent combined with a fertilizer, fine, and you can generally, read the label, but generally they're okay to use around fruit trees. Pre-emergents, can be applied anytime. You need to do them in certain intervals so that they maintain their effectiveness in the soil over a certain period of time. But they start working as soon as they're incorporated into the soil. If you already have weeds, it's not going to help you with those, but it will help you with the next generation and the ones that are following the next season.
There was not a lot of pre-emergent done this last year, or maybe we just got enough rain that no amount of pre-emergent would have mattered.
And the more moisture you have, the more frequently you have to apply pre-emergence, and it can get leached out. But you can definitely tell who did and didn't do a very good job of it. I was on a sales call out in the Pinnacle Peak, Rio Verde area. The desert that was really pretty a couple months ago is now really pretty brown. The post-emergent weed control needs to start happening mechanically with a hoe and a rake, as well as using pre-emergence for the next upcoming season.
I'll say on the plus side, though, have you seen the saguaro cactuses? They are blowing up with flowers.
They're budding and starting to bloom, and that's going to be a big, heavy bloom, it looks like, yeah. Yep.
Now, for weeds that are already dead, is there any point to hitting it with weed killer, or if they've already gone to flower and you're past the point of being able to kill the seeds?
Yeah, in the cases of the stuff that's already dried up, gone to seed, it's dry, that's where you want to make sure you use a pre-emergent, especially as you mechanically remove those, whether it's by hand and pulling them or you use a weed eater and knock them down. You're scattering that seed potentially all over the place. You might as well just get it knocked down, get it raked up, get it picked up, and then come back with a pre-emergent that'll prevent anything that's there that might come up this summer yet. More importantly, remember all that seed you just put on the ground before next winter comes along, because most of these are annual weeds. The stuff that's dying now are cool season weeds. They're going to come up with any amount of fall or winter rain next year. You're going to have another bumper crop. So one application in the fall, one application in the spring. That generally will get you both of our weed seasons taken care of. If we have a lot of rain, you might have to do two spring applications.
I used to really have a dislike for California cheeseweed.
Mm-hmm.
After getting overgrown with ragweed, that California cheeseweed isn't so bad.
Well, there was lots of weeds this year that people, some of them I don't know that I've ever seen. Some of them, the wild chamomile, which had the little yellow button flowers all over it.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my heavens.
That
it was
stuff
just everywhere.
Really gets me when I go to pick it. Immediately I start sneezing.
Oh, yeah. It's got a very strong odor and definitely will get your sinuses going.
But at least on those and the cheeseweed, I can stake a goat out and they'll eat it. The goats won't even eat the ragweed. It'd sit there and starve before
them?
It eats the rag. No.
It's called ragweed for a reason.
What do you kill it with? I've got a combination of things.
Your own concoction, huh?
Well,
your dad would use a flamethrower.
That's true.
And so, I have done that.
And that works.
And I have pulled them by hand. Mm-hmm. But the thing with the flamethrower is the root's still in there, and it comes back.
Yeah.
That does not kill the root. And this ragweed, you know, when you pull it, if you don't get that whole root out, it comes back twice as strong and hard the next growing season. So I've started doing liquid applications. And in the lawn, I use the cleanup, which is the glyphosate-based product from Bonide,
right.
You know, your equivalent to Roundup. I hit it as hard as I can with whatever potency they'll sell me over the counter. But around the orchard, even though they haven't really proven anything, just for the peace of mind, I use the organics. And that works really good, the burnout. It's the neem citrus oil. I mean, within an hour, you can see it start to crumble up and die. I just don't know how well it's killing the root, and I probably won't know until next season.
Well, it probably isn't at all. But if you continually kill the top so the plant can no longer conduct photosynthesis, eventually the plant will die.
The root will eventually die out.
So if you do it, in theory, often enough, and the smaller and younger and more tender it is, the easier and better. Because if you wait till something's 2 feet tall and you kill it, then you got a big 2 foot tall dead. Mm-hmm. Then you got to dispose of that. If you can catch them when they're just coming up, zap them with that organic burn product. It just turns it into, you know, burned up tissue, and it crumbles, and you don't even know it was there.
When I was looking at labels, Weed Beater Complete actually list ragweed, so we're trying that one now around a few of the oak trees. But, man, once one little area starts, we see one little new sprout of ragweed where it hasn't previously been, I mean, immediately we attack that area, because you'll turn around and there'll be 50.
Well, it's very vigorous. As you know, you see pollen reports, it's way up there. Well, that means it's making lots of seeds as well. So it's very vigorous.
Oh, joy.
Yeah.
All right, let's talk about lawn transitioning. We're in that perfect time to start getting our Bermudas in if we haven't already. We missed planting a winter lawn, so we've got a beautiful
Bermuda. Your Bermuda's probably greened up.
It's beautiful. I just hit it with a little Turf Royale this week.
One advantage of not doing a winter lawn is you will have a very smooth transition. Your Bermuda will just come back, and it kind of comes back all at once. People that do winter lawns, it's a much more spotty process. It can be kind of ugly, especially if the ryegrass stays alive well into the summer, which we really don't want to happen. So now that we've started to touch 100 for a day or two, and ryegrass isn't going to like that too much. It probably have started to see some brown or burning spots or spots in the yard that don't look as good. I'm not an advocate for turning the water off and burning it up that way, because that's going to damage the struggling Bermuda grass that's underneath that's trying to come back as well. But what you can do is remove as much of that ryegrass canopy as possible. You know, it's the same we just talked about. As your citrus trees grow, you won't have lawn underneath them because it's shady. Well, if the ryegrass is big and vigorous, it's shading out the Bermuda grass as well. And if it stays there too long, the Bermuda grass cannot survive in dormancy that long. So we need to remove that canopy. I start cutting the lawn shorter and shorter to the point where you basically just scalp it. It'll look burned up. Some of the ryegrass will come back again, and you know, you go through this period. I like to dethatch about mid-June, when the Bermuda will be coming back very vigorously. We're just in that time period now where you're just probably going to have a little bit of an ugly lawn in places, and there's not a heck of a lot you can do about it other than try and help the process along by speeding it up, by killing that ryegrass or eliminating that competitor as fast and effectively as you can by mowing short, dethatching. Aerification's another good thing to do. If you can get with a neighbor and maybe go rent a core aerifier, it's a heavy, hard-to-handle piece of machinery, fairly easy to operate, and it's a fairly fast process. So I usually recommend two or three neighbors go together, do it, help each other out, do it at the same time, get it done. It's just a little hard to get on and off the little trailer they rent it with, because it's heavy. It's got to be heavy to drive those tines down into the ground. Make sure you mark your sprinkler heads, whether you're dethatching or aerifying, so you don't damage sprinkler heads.
And it doesn't hurt to water heavy the day before either.
A day or two before heavy. Yeah, if it's too dry and hard, that thing will just be like a jackhammer. It'll be bouncing all over the place.
The first time I rented one, the lawn had been abandoned for, you know, who knows how long before we bought the property. I thought, well, there's, you know, look how hard this is. We got to get this aerated to get this water down there.
Yeah.
It was sometimes a waste of time. I thought, yeah, all right, lesson learned.
Then it becomes a track meet because those tines then just become more wheels. They're just pulling that thing along, and it's bouncing and pulling you. The other thing you can do, too, some of them you can actually take like a cinder block and wire it to the top to get more weight on it to get it to drive down a little deeper. But, yeah, there ought to be some moisture in the soil or it won't work very well.
And those plugs usually fill up fairly quickly. Some people I've seen put sand in them, but
it's a great opportunity once you have these open holes in your ground then to get some gypsum or soil sulfur, some organic fertilizer, organic material, and get that on there. And then what I would do is take my lawnmower without the bag or catcher on it and just go in and chop all that stuff up and go over it two or three times and kind of chop that stuff, and it'll just start falling back into those holes, all that gypsum, soil sulfur, fertilizer, organic material, and even the plugs, and just kind of fall back in a loose state, and then water it good.
And open up the soil, let the root growth really get stimulated, and
absolutely
put you on a nice green lawn. I didn't do the back lawn this summer. Uh-huh. It seems like we spent a lot of time doing it and then never seem to get out there. Everyone's always out in the front yard.
Well, that's the whole concept of xeriscaping, and that's, you know, you have a lawn where you need a lawn, where you're going to use a lawn. If you don't need a lawn, you don't have any kids anymore, you don't have dogs, then, you know, you probably don't need any grass. But if you got kids and not, then have it, but have it where you're going to use it. It's, you know, it's pretty to look at, but if you're just having it there so you can look at it and the neighbors enjoy it and you get to mow it.
That's a lot of work for just looking at it.
There's a lot of things that look good that you can put in the yard that'll take a lot less water than that.
So, all right, it's our final segment here coming up in our Outdoor Living Hour with Jay Harper of the Farm's Choice.